Help us out, get a quick running head start or quick running start. Help me out. Where are we at in the Samson story? What has Samson just done? Killed a bunch of people with the jawbone of a donkey. It was great, actually, in kids' church. Heather was leading the group, and she asked, "What is Samson really good at?" And one kid raised his hand and said, "Killing people." Man, that kid knows his Bible, because it's absolutely true. So he's killing. Why is he killing Philistines with a donkey? Jawbone of a donkey. They killed his father-in-law and his wife, burned them to death inside their house. Why did the Philistines do that? Because he burnt their crops with 300 foxes tied together with the tails. Why did Samson burn the crops? Because he got duped, his wife got handed off to another guy. Why did his wife get handed off to another guy? Because he stormed off in a fit of rage and killed 30 people in a Philistine city. Why did he go and do that? He needed clothes to pay for a debt, for a riddle that the Philistines solved. Why did he get upset at the Philistines for that? Because his wife narked on him, and as he poetically said, "You plowed with my heifer." And so it's one of these things you got to catch this. This is a long list and litany of, and sometimes we forget where we get in the story simply because it takes a long time to develop, of all these crazy things that happened. So right now, Samson is just finished up with this incredible feat of strength, killing 1,000 people with the donkey's jawbone. And then we see Samson take a turn for the worst. Have you ever found yourself in a situation that you would have never believed? Have you ever been on top of the world one moment and then plunged down into the depths of despair? There was a time in life when I was strong. There was a time in life when I looked at the future and everything seemed to be going great. I had these moments and these times when God would come upon me in power and strength, and there was absolutely nothing that could stop me. I felt invincible. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever feel like nothing could stop you? That the whole world is laid out before you and you are just riding this incredible wave? And then there comes a day when everything crashes. And now here I sit, alone, in prison, and I can't see. I can still remember, can still play the images. It's still vividly burned into my brain when they grabbed that tool and gouged out my eyes. Though I can't physically see, I see that every day. Pain is still there. The trauma is still there. And now all I do is spend my hours grinding up grain. I'm pretty sure God hates me. My family is gone. My wife is gone. My faith is gone. The power of God that used to course through my veins is now just a distant memory. And some people wonder, how did this happen? What did it take for me to be on top of the world one moment and to be horribly depressed the next? Being able to be so strong one moment and now so incredibly weak. I can tell you what happened. I didn't see it at the time, but I know what took place. I compromised. It was small compromises to begin with, but it sure didn't seem like it had any issues. I was supposed to be special. I was supposed to be different. I was supposed to be sure that I'm not touching dead things and I'm refraining from wine or grapes or raisins. And it was really simple because I could be around dead things and God still seemed to love me. I could still be around vineyards and touch grapes and even drink some wine, and I still had the power of God with me. And so I kept compromising. I kept compromising my faith over and over and over again. Until one day, I went too far. We get lulled into a sense of comfortableness in our compromise, so much so that we never even realize that we have fully wandered away from God and His grace. So how did it happen? What was the story that took place? Judges 16 starts the story, the downfall of Samson. Verse 1, one day Samson went to Gaza, and Gaza is a Philistine city. He's not supposed to be there. It was a long journey. This is one of those times when Samson does something, and it wasn't as if he was weak faith for a temporary moment and then falls into a sin that he completely regrets. This was deliberate actions as he searched out how to find a prostitute for the evening. And so he travels down all the way to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. She has no name. We don't know who she is, and this is about all the press she receives. And he went in to spend the night with her. Again, compromising. Up until now, he's probably thinking, gosh, is this really going to push anything over the edge? And after engaging in a night with this prostitute, it still appears as if God has not quite left Samson. And we know that because of what takes place next. The people of Gaza were told Samson is here, so they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. You see, they're still remembering all the stuff. Samson and the Philistines and their history of revenge after revenge after revenge is still in play. And so the Philistines are looking for a way to get him. So they figure they're going to go down to Gaza. They found out that he's holed up there. And they say, let's just wait till the morning. I don't know, maybe he'll be a little more tired. You know, he hasn't gotten his morning Starbucks, and so he might be a little groggy. Let's jump him then and capture him. They made no move during the night, saying, at dawn, we kill him. Verse 3, but Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. And then he got up, took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Now, these city gates are no small gates. These are very large wooden structure that he pulls up out of their posts, tosses them on his shoulder, and walks 40 miles. That is a long trek. I can't do 40 miles just carrying a cup of water, let alone a couple of city gates. Samson still is endowed with this incredible power and strength from God. Even though he continues to compromise, God has not quite abandoned him yet. He has not drifted so far away that God still can't reach him. But he's getting closer. This is one of those things that we always harp on over and over again as people wonder, well, I just sinned and nothing bad happened to me. I just made a mistake and God doesn't punish me for it. So maybe God's okay with my action. I can tell you confidently, no, he's not. And as we continue to harden our heart and go down that path and that road, eventually the distance is so great that God's grace can't get to us. We wander so far, stubbornly turning our back on God, that eventually he's no longer there. Samson, though, is still with God, even though he's shacking up with prostitutes. Verse 4, sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the Valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. So now we get the wonderful Samson and Delilah story. I'm going to give you wonderful trivia that you can fool your friends at when you go to parties, such as, who cut Samson's hair? A man cut Samson's hair. Not Delilah. We all think Delilah did it. Delilah did not cut Samson's hair. So that's the fun trivia. So let's see what we learned from Delilah and her story. So first of all, should he... what was that? Oh, I thought someone said... Okay. So he fell in love with a woman in the Valley of Sorek. His name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, see if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver. Well, this is great. Again, this is the reason why I don't believe that Samson is naturally strong and buff, because if they said, hey, what's the secret to his strength, great strength? Delilah could just say he works out every morning and he actually, you know, eats well. And no, I think that Samson's just a regular looking dude. They're just baffled at how do we capture this guy, because every time we send delegations to get him, he somehow slips through our fingers because of his great strength. There is something going on. And so they approach Delilah. Now, Delilah, we can quickly figure out her greatest motivation in this, because is she going to sell out Samson? Yeah, she's going to sell him out for how much money? 5,500 shekels of silver. There's five Philistine cities, so five Philistine rulers, and they all said to her, we'll each give you 1,100 each. And so this woman sells out her husband for a payday. Does this mean that Delilah loves Samson? Probably not. That'd be my guess. I don't know why she married him. I don't know if there was something else going on. But the moment the Philistines approach her and ask for help, she's quick to say, absolutely. So Delilah said to Samson, tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued. Men. If you start dating a girl and all she is interested in is how to make you weak, don't let her near a pair of scissors. You might end up weak. This is, again, Delilah is not asking for her own edification. We, as the reader, know the story better than Samson. Samson is clueless, right? All of this stuff that's happened has been very secretive to Samson. So we have inside information that that Samson does not. But it should clue you in if someone wants to know how to make you weak. It goes vice versa. Men, it's not appropriate for us to find out how do we make other people weak. This is how things like bullying starts. We try to find ways to tear people down, and so we attack them, and we usually love it when we can attack them at their most vulnerable and at their weakest point. Often it revolves around similar subjects. Wow, you're fat. That is often a quick way to tear someone down. Wow, you're ugly. Man, you're stupid. We are quick to know how to tear people down. Delilah wants to tear Samson down. And so, how do we subdue you? Samson, apparently not too bright. As I said, some people think that Samson is like this ideal man because he's strong, long hair, he's a poet. He's not too bright. He is one fry short of a happy meal. And so he simply responds, if anyone ties me with seven fresh, that would be like bowstrings, the English translation thong probably doesn't work in our vernacular, that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man. So up until this point, Delilah is truly and utterly clueless about what Samson's, where his strength lies. We know from the story that of the three parts of the Nazarite vow that he had taken, he's already broken two of them. There's only one that somehow or other he has been able to manage and hold on to, and that's his long hair. But it's very interesting that Delilah doesn't know this. So this also tells us that Samson is not very good about sharing who he is. He has not confided in Delilah, I am an Israelite. There had to have been a point. I mean, all the other Israelites got short hair except for Fabio. You would think that at some point Delilah's like, hey, why the long hair? What's been his answer up until now? I think it just makes me look good, right? Yeah, if you have seen, there was a Facebook picture that just got posted recently of me back in college when I had long hair. Did most of you see it? Yeah, it's a great picture. There's another picture, I think it's on the side of our refrigerator. It's really funny. We're at the beach, and we're both leaning forward, and every time I show that picture, everyone says, who's that girl that's with Heather? And it's because I had luscious locks. They were beautiful. They were great. But mine was not because of any religious thing. It was just simply because I was in rebellion and I like to have long hair. And I also like to look like Canadian hockey players because I think... Oh, he was Czechoslovakian. My apologies. Still, I love... Yeah, they're great people. Samson has long hair because he's supposed to be different. Do you ever disclose to other people the claim that God has on your life? Or do we find other things to say that help steer people away from the conversation? Let's get together on Sunday. I can't. Why? I'm just busy. I've got stuff to do. But you don't want to let them know that you're going to church or to youth group. Why in the world don't you have enough money to give? Well, things are just kind of tight. And you refrain from talking about how you use your stuff for God's glory. People wonder why you don't engage in wonderful speech, of colorful jokes that have horrible punchlines. And people are wondering, like, well, why? Why don't you do that? And you just, don't. Or even worse, maybe you do engage in that. And lo and behold, people around us have no idea why in the world we follow after God, because we try to keep that as secret as possible. This is Samson. He's compromising again. Little by little, bit by bit. And I tell you, probably one, we've all compromised, right? We've all done things we shouldn't have done. We've all hidden our faith for various reasons. We all do it. But do we get into a pattern of behavior that we just keep on compromising over and over and over again? Samson was willing to do it. He was willing to compromise. Now, granted, he starts off with this, anyone ties me with seven fresh thongs that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man. Of course, we know that that's not the truth, right? At this point now, Samson is just playing games with his wife. And as you get older and older, you discover that playing games with a spouse is not very fun. It's just not the way you're supposed to handle yourself. And so, verse 8, the rulers of the Philistines brought her seven fresh thongs that had not been dried, and she tied him with it. The inference is that, you know, he goes to bed, and, you know, she goes in and she ties him. Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever seen those people that sleep so soundly that, you know, I think this is Samson. Like, here she is tying him up with seven fresh, bowstrings, and he is just out. He's dead to society. Ties him up, and then, with men hidden in the room. Yeah, this is one of those stories. You're like, this is totally unbelievable. Yeah, so they're going to bed. She ties him up, and then she goes, oh my gosh, Samson, there's people here. The Philistines are upon you. And he stands up. And the power of God, I don't know if he even needed the power of God at this point, seven, you know, fresh ropes. Like, and remember, this whole gambit's been tried before, right? This whole thing's been done where he just, you know, hulks out. And, of course, what would you do if you were the men at that point in the room? You're probably screaming. You're probably running. It's quite hilarious. And off they go. What should the conversation go like after this? I mean, is this just a coincidence that previously in that day, she says, how do you become weak? Tie me with seven fresh thongs and I'll be weak. And then that evening, what happens? You're tied with seven fresh thongs. Like, Samson, none too bright. Yep, the wheel is spinning, but the hamster is dead. He doesn't say anything, but what does Delilah say? Because women, what do you do? Oh, by the way, I'm a master at this. You can ask Heather. If I'm at fault, I am so skilled that I could turn it around, and it's really her fault. Oh, and she's really good, too. She does the same thing. We're very good at that. We're very good at when we're at fault, we can quickly blame other people, right? And it's as old as the first human beings. Eve blames the snake. Adam blames Eve and God. It's as old as time. It's hilarious. So she says, until now, I'm sure she's crying too, because it's very effective. Women crying, men just like, okay, I'm a stupid head. Until now, you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied. Like, okay, should warning bells now be going off? You would think, I think she's quite intelligent because Samson's weakness is women. Samson's weakness is not being able to handle conflict with members of the opposite sex. Can he handle conflict with members of his own sex? Oh, yeah, he's really good at just giving him a donkey's jawbone. He'll just kill 1,000 people. But yeah, that may not be handling conflict. He flies. He's a very angry person, which is interesting that in that light, he doesn't bring it into his relationship with Delilah. She says, you're making a fool of me. Tell me how you can be tied. So he replies. He plays again. Some people think that Samson is doing this on purpose. I just don't think you can be this stupid. If you weave, oh, wait a second, I missed one. If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man. So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then with men hidden in the room, she called him, Samson, the Philistines are upon you! But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. How do you get weak? Oh, just tie me with new ropes. And then that night, you're tied with new ropes. Gosh. a lot of people believe that what's going on here is a lot of people believed that they had correctly identified that there was something magical about Samson. We know that his magic was not true magic. It was just endowment by God. But for a lot of those cultures that were superstitious, there would be like one Achilles heel. Just one spot there, or just do this, and someone will be... It's the kryptonite. I mean, I think that's where the Superman story really goes back to. There's this one strange thing that can subdue you, and because no man can be perfectly invincible. So... I don't think they wanted to kill him. I don't think they wanted to kill him. Because don't we do that, right? Like, you hurt me, I hurt you. You hurt me, I hurt you. We keep doing this for a while. As soon as it's like, well, why not just kill it? No, you know what? You don't even deserve death. You deserve more punishment, incarceration. So, yeah, I think that it'd be really simple. He's sound asleep. She could have done it. Plunged the knife right into his heart. Boom, it's done. It's over. But that's not what the Philistines wanted. They wanted him captured. The problem is, how do you capture Superman? You send Batman, I guess. I don't know. I've watched the movie, so... Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering if maybe he didn't have special properties with his skin, because how in the world do you fight 1,000 people and not get any kind of nick or anything? They got spears to poke.
Oh, I'm sure he would. I think he was damaged. I would imagine. I mean, he got thirsty. So, yeah, I don't think he was invincible in that respect. I think he probably had battle wounds, but... They might be trying to find out the secret so that they can get it. That is a possibility. But we can see from what's going to be happening here is the end of the story tells us their main focus is we want to capture them to hurt them. We don't want to kill them. We want to hurt them. Yeah.
Is there a possibility that he was not being tied up, that he was voluntarily...
You know what? I heard a sermon on that. It was very weird. One guy... said that it was like it was a game that was being played. But the weird part is, then why are there men hidden in the closet? If there were not, if the phrase "and there were men in the room," if that wasn't there, I could see him.
But I think he might be falling for it. She knows all along. But
yeah,
Yeah,
that's the thing. When it comes to whatever a woman asks, he's just going to do it, especially when it's his wife. He gets this almost this blind spot. Yeah, and that's why he's going along with this. And yeah, he's just... I feel for Samson. I do. I have a weakness for pretty women. That's why I married one. You're supposed to say, "Oh, thank you. You guys are slow today. What's wrong with you?" Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I have a weakness for one pretty woman. Thank you. So, wow. Okay. Wow. If you tie me with a dozen red ropes, I'll be as weak. Where am I at? 13. So Delilah then said to Samson, again, she turns on the waterworks, "Until now you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." Oh my gosh. You know what? There's such a study. I would really love to go into a study. This is the male-female relationships, but these are the dangers. Men sometimes get blinded in such a way that they can't see what's right there in front of it, and women can often be manipulative. Please don't get me wrong. It's vice versa. Everyone does it. But these are following some very typical male-female things. And he just does not seem to get it, and she knows how to control him. She does. And then, so now his third response, it gets really dicey. "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with the pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." And why is this dangerous? Now he's talking about his hair, his luscious locks. Again, so while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into the fabric, and tightened it with the pin. Again, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." Who is the idiot that's still hiding in the closet at this point? Like, she's like, "Okay, guys, I got it. Yeah, come. I swear, it's going to work this time. This time." And some dude's like, "Okay, I guess I'll go with you, Delilah." Like, they're just stupid people all through this chapter. But yeah. It's the inference is the same cycle continues on. Yeah, that. Yeah, stupid breeds stupid or gathers stupid, I guess. So again, she called upon him, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He awoke from his sleep and pulled the pin and the loom with the fabric. And then she said to him, how can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? I mean, is this just brilliant? Like when you look at what Delilah's saying, she's like, if you really loved me, you would tell me. Why don't you become vulnerable and sensitive? Samson, you brute. Just, you know, talk to me. Oh, it's total manipulation. There's no question about it. Yeah, it's, and the hard part is, you know, Samson, how do you stand up to that? Samson doesn't. He just goes along with it. So she's crying now. And so then it's really interesting. Verse 17, so he told her everything. The idea behind this is we're going to sit down and have a heart-to-heart. So he throws out everything. For the first time, he's now also going to reveal that he is a special Israelite in the covenant relationship with God. No razor has ever been used on my head, he said, because I have been a Nazarite, set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man. Question, is Samson's strength in his hair? No. That's the crazy thing about this. It's not the hair that gives him the power. It's God. But why does God allow this then to happen? Because he's showing Samson once again the compromise you give, and it's about your hair. Where is the acknowledgement that I serve a wonderful and mighty God? Why am I so talented? Why can I sing so beautifully? Is it because you practice and you slave away with karaoke tracks? That might get you better, but who should actually get the glory? How come some people can speak in front of other people and it's wonderful and it's great? They might practice over and over and over again. They might have lots of experience, but where is it that they actually get their speaking ability from? From God. Why are there people that are better at cheerleading? Why are there people that are better at playing the trombone? Why are there people that are better at sports? Is it simply because of their own natural ability, or do we stop and give thanks to God? Do you ever do that with other things? I know we don't like, because this one's always a touchy one. Do you ever thank God for your beauty? Do you know God made you? Do you ever say, thank you, Lord, for making me who I am? And thank you for what you've done? This is one of those really sad situations. This is my theory. I can't prove it. But my theory is at that moment, that's when his strength left him and was not going to ever return. See how the story folds out when Delilah saw that he had told her everything. So she kind of gets the, because girls, you're good at this, right? You're good at dragging stuff out at men. Right? Hi, honey, how was your day? It's fine. Anything bad happen? No, it's fine. And it's so great because you can just kind of keep digging at it until finally you can feel when their walls break down. And this is what happens with Delilah. She knows that this is it. So she said back to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. Just one more time. I promise he has told me everything. So somehow convinced him. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands, having put him to sleep on her lap. I wonder how she put him to sleep. Probably played with his hair. It's my guess. She called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his hair. How would you have liked to have been that dude? Hey, he's asleep. Come on. No, scary. He's asleep. This poor guy with, you know, the pair of scissors, he's like, oh, what do I do? Because he knows that if he gets right up to him, and what happens if it's not the hair? Right, this dude is dead. He's grabbing the pair of scissors and slaughtering another 2,000 Philistines. Right? But this dude sleeps like a baby. Cuts his hair. Shaved off the 7 braids of his hair. and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Verse 20, then she called, Samson, the Philistines are here. He awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. And this, if you want to underline it, this is the saddest sentence in the entire Bible. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. And that's what compromise does to us. Starts small, starts innocent, could start in a number of different ways, but people just slowly drift away, little by little, compromising in small areas and then in bigger areas and then in bigger areas until soon they find themselves in a place that they had never thought they would ever be in. We could take this to the extreme one. I've dealt with a lot of people who have had affairs, and it's always the same story. I asked, like, did you wake up one day and said, you know what, I think today I'm going to ruin my life. I think today I'm going to have an affair and everything's going to go out the window. No, it's always the same. I compromised here. I started talking to someone who wasn't my wife, and we were playing and having fun, but there was nothing that was going on. I can handle it. I can do that. And then he would spend more time with her. Oh, but that's okay. We're coworkers. We're supposed to be together more often. And then he would find excuses to stay late at the office. But it's okay. There's nothing going on. And then that one moment while they're eating dinner at a restaurant they shouldn't be, and next to them, their hands accidentally touch. But it was nothing. It was total accident. I didn't even mean to have my hand 3 inches from her body. And then let's continue on. Every time it's happened, it's always small compromises. That's how it happens when people talk to me about later on in life, they come to their senses in some way, like a prodigal living in a foreign land, and they go, how did I get here? Like, how did my life become such a mess? When did this actually take place? And they look back for like this one defining moment, and more often than not, it isn't a defining moment. It's series of compromises that we have given into that have ultimately led for us just completely and utterly walking away. And that's what happened with Samson. It was as if it was the final straw. He finally essentially gave up everything that made him special and didn't care about it. I sometimes believe that Samson was testing the waters once more. Nothing happened when I touched a dead body. I still had the power of God. Nothing happened when I drank wine at my wedding. Nothing seemed to happen. So there was one final thing, and that was his hair. And he just abused it. He didn't give glory to God for his hair. He allowed someone to destroy him because of it. And we could take the very thing that is our greatest strength can become quickly our greatest weakness. I remember hearing that seminary class, and it was probably one of the most enlightening things. I didn't understand it at the time, but it's something I now understand completely. Because that which is our greatest strength, we come to rely upon, and we start building ourselves up and around this one particular gift. And let me tell you, it's sad when it happens. I've dealt with this with other people that are really good at this particular skill, and as they go, they realize they don't even need to work at it because they're just so naturally talented at it. And soon it draws them away from God because they're just simply full of themselves. I don't know if it's happened to you, but if it does, you often wonder, is there any going back? Because he now has lost everything, compromise after compromise. He is now just like everyone else outside of the relationship with God. Verse 21, so the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Because he needed to pay for the city gates that he's destroyed. He needs to pay for the thousands of Philistines he killed with the jawbone of a donkey. He needs to pay for the crops that he destroyed. And so they gouged out his eyes. We sometimes, this is where you kind of see him at his lowest. They bind him with bronze shackles. They sent him to grinding in the prison. They've found a way to really make him pay for this. But if there's stupidity at the beginning of the chapter, there seems to be stupidity at the end of the chapter. Because if I were the Philistines, what would I be doing every single day with Samson? Oh, you got a little stubble there. I think we need to shave that. Yeah, let's just keep it really short. But we see from the text that they didn't notice that the hair on his head began to grow. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, "Our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands." Some people think that the power of God returned to Samson because his hair grew long. I don't think so. I think the power of God returned to Samson because the one thing that ticks God off the most is if you besmirch his holy name. And now they are walking around saying, "Dagon is powerful. Dagon is strong. Dagon delivered the Israelites and this chump into our hands. Our God is bigger. Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. Our God is higher than any other. Our God can beat up your God." And this was what happened back in those days. And so they started gloating and boasting. And when the people saw him, they praised their God, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who had laid waste our land and multiplied our slain." And while they were in high spirits, I always love that phrase, while they were blitzed out of their minds, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." I have no idea what Samson's other natural talents. I don't know what entertainment. Does he do magic? You know, does he? Yeah, maybe he dances. I don't know. But he's got a blindfold on because he can't see. He's running into things. I don't know. Maybe that would be a funny thing to do. You know, set up a maze and have him bump into walls and then change the maze and he keeps bumping into stuff. Could be. And he performed for them. This is where, again, we see Samson at his lowest. And this is where I find a lot of people. This is usually the moment that one of two things happen. Either someone goes off the deep end, or they return to God. And this is what I think is happening with Samson. His hair was growing, but I think during that time, he was probably also thinking. What was he thinking? He was thinking, "What a mess I've made of my life." If you are at rock bottom, it's not always the worst place to be. Because you actually might have an ability to see yourself for who you are and God for who he is. So Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I might lean on them." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Wow, this is a party, all right. You know, it's not just seating down here. A lot of people had to get up onto the roof. And so Samson's going to raise the roof and bring the house down. 28, then Samson prayed to the Lord. Whoa. Okay, now, I really wish that Samson had a better prayer than what he's about to pray. Because his prayer is selfish, it's misdirected, it is off track. But then I stop to think about my prayers and I go, wow, aren't most of my prayers the exact same as Samson's? So I really want this to be neat and clean. I really want Samson to end the hero with this incredible conversion and his life is now magically restored. And I'll tell you this, I don't know if that ever happens. Do you ever see it happen? I mean, I've seen people at the bottom come back to God, but yet their life is still problematic. They still have the residue of sin and stench and poor choices are still upon them. Some of them are still blind, like Samson. Samson never regains his sight back. And sometimes our poor choices put us into positions where we still have to deal with the consequences of our own sin, even though we return back to God. And I have never seen, I'm telling you, every time I've seen someone come to faith, and it's always a wonderful thing when that happens, their life is a mess. You know, I really, it harkens back to when Jesus talked about, "I'm going to make you fishers of men." Wouldn't you like it if you caught a fish and it came out of the ocean, that it would already be descaled, gutted, filleted, cooked, with some seasoning and a light oil and come out ready to eat. No, usually they stink really badly. And that's us. Coming to faith, we stink. We don't have our stuff together. And this is where it becomes dangerous for the rest of us who have been filleted and fried. We often think as we see someone new coming in or we see a teenager that's growing up and we're like, you've got to be perfect. Yeah, we got to watch our inability to remember how hard it was for us to grow up and develop faith. There sometimes needs to be some grace and mercy because teenagers are a mess. Hi, Jacob. Because he's, you know, he's here. Joshua's homesick and, you know, and Bubba, he's gone. Bubba's perfect. So I'm just, you're perfect too, Jacob. If you ever have someone who is really trying to learn the Christian faith and grow in them, they're not going to do things perfectly. And that's what happens with Samson. But he does have one thing. He's got his faith. Everything else about him is a total mess, but he's got his faith. And this prayer that he prays is starting off by talking about God. Oh, sovereign Lord. Why would he want to say, oh, sovereign Lord? What does it mean to say, oh, sovereign Lord? When you say, oh, sovereign Lord, you're saying, Lord, I believe that all the circumstances in my life you can use for your glory. It is an attitude of victory, not bitterness. It's not looking around and saying, why do I have these problems? Why do I have these parents? Why do I have these grades? Why do I have this job? Why do I have this wife, this husband? Why am I stuck where I'm at? Instead, he says, you know what, God? You're sovereign. You know everything. You're in control. You're in charge. And even though things are really a giant mess in my life, somehow you're going to have to use this. When you come to that conclusion, it's pretty crazy. Oh, sovereign Lord, remember me, oh God. And whenever someone says remember me in scriptures, it's not like God has forgotten them. Remember me means to look with special favor upon someone. Remember me once more. Please strengthen me just once more and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes. So you're like, no, come on. No. Like, I wish that line was just stricken. Like, it was really good up until then. Like, God, sovereign God, strengthen me so I might smite my enemy because they took my eyes. No, just say, Lord, humbly, you use me as you see fit. But if you're looking for a perfect person in the Bible, there isn't one. Well, there's one. There's that one dude. His name is Jesus. But this is where you start seeing that during that time, instead of getting angry and bitter, he grew in his faith. So Samson reached toward the two central pillars. Who engineered this stupid palace? Like, are they idiots or something? You're going to put two load-bearing pillars within hand's distance, and then you're going to let a dude that can kill people with the jawbone of a donkey stand in between them? Like, who does this? Yeah, he picks up gates. I mean, he destroys things, so you're going to put him right in between the two load-bearing pillars. Bracing himself against him, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other, Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. Like, why don't you just say, Lord, use me as you want? But no, we have these imperfect people that God uses. Then he pulled with all his might, and down came the temple and the rulers and all the people in it. Thus, he killed many more when he died than while he lived. Which is a lot. Yeah, you know, he killed at least 1,000 in one shot and a bunch in others. And here it's, you know, 3,000 or more died in one shot. Which is, again, it's the same thing I've said throughout all of the book of Judges, highlighted here really importantly, which is you could be the biggest screw-up in the world and God can still use you. In fact, God wants to use you. That's how he operates. Don't ever discount yourself. Don't ever discount your kids, your parents, that punk kid on a skateboard, that old, grumpy grandma. Don't ever count them out. God never does. God can use anyone as he sees fit. And what does it take? Some people wonder when they're sitting all alone in the darkness with the blindness, they're wondering how, you know, what's the next step? Where do I go? Again, if you just go up and you just go for God, then God can restore. You might still be blind, but you will have faith. I've seen this happen so many times. It's brilliant when it does. Verse 31, we get to see his family return. Then his brothers and his father's whole family went down to get him. They brought him back and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol and the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel 20 years. The rise and fall of Samson reminds us that living a life of compromise often lands us in very difficult situations, but that is never the end of our story. God has grace for all. Let's pray. Lord, maybe some of us